Computer. Security override.
This is Through the Jump Gate, a science fiction discussion podcast.
Episode 27.
Hosted by Kosh and Raven.
It kind of broke my heart having to cut off that music in favor of ours, but
it's true. I gotta say, I like both series. They did have some really cool music in both of them. Very epic.
In the original series, epic. In the reimagined series, I don't know if I'd call it the same kind of epic, but it's still really good.
Yeah, I agree. It's not as epic in and of itself. When you take the storyline, it becomes epic. But, you know,
it's the new soundtrack, the one for the reimagined series, that I went out and got. I have the soundtrack for the original premiere miniseries that, like...
Well, obviously, because, yeah.
and I got the soundtrack for each of the four seasons of the show as well. So I have five soundtracks for the reimagined series. I only have the theme song from the original. Hello, jumpers! Welcome back to another episode of Through the Jump Gate, a science fiction discussion podcast. We are, if you can't figure it out from the intro music that we played, we were chatting about Battlestar Galactica, starting off with the music.
And enjoying some delicious iced tea. I've got to say, this is very good.
Oh, well, thank you very much. The generic store brand from the store that I shop at thanks you for your compliments.
See, but that's also technique. I gotta throw that back to you. Technique was good.
I did put in sugar and one teaspoon of sugar for an entire pitcher and about half a lemon.
Oh,
sliced lemons sitting in the tea as well.
Gotta say, that was a good idea.
Why? Thank you.
It does make it a very nice light taste. Nothing overpowering.
What makes mine even better, I think, is the fact that I'm drinking it out of what looks like a moonshine mason jar.
See, that makes everything taste better, in my opinion. To be very honest, I love those, or those little glass jars. They're like little tiny cups that German mustard comes in.
Oh yes, yes.
I love those.
So, as you can tell from the music discussion right there at the beginning, today's episode is going to be all about Battlestar Galactica.
So say we all!
But not the original. I should point that out. We are not discussing the original Battlestar Galactica on this episode. Maybe one of these days if I can ever acquire and watch that series. But I haven't seen that one. I've seen the reimagined with Edward James Olmos, Mary McDonald, Katie Sackhoff, Jamie Bamber, etc., etc.
No, I've seen the original one. I watched when it came out, and I'll mention it in a couple of spots just, you know, for perspective. But yeah, pretty much this is about the new series. I should say right now, jumpers, I'm gonna let you know my opinion, as usual, is there. I really liked the original growing up on it. I'm not going to say it was a great series, but I really enjoyed it. And I've got various things that I know were terrible that I think were great, as far as I really enjoyed them. But I'm not going to say they're great movies. The Last Action Hero being a good example. That was an awful movie.
I watched that last week. But I loved it.
You know? by comparison, I was good with the new series right up till the end, and I hated that last series and the final ending. We'll get into, but it was just awful. It was atrocious.
Let's clarify. You thought it was awful. That doesn't mean that it is objectively awful.
No, it does. It does. I in fact, make those rules for the universe.
That is not so.
Look it up in the library.
Let's also, for further clarification, point out that I wasn't a big fan of the finale either. I tried to cut them some slack in certain areas when I could, but there are some things that undeniably I did not enjoy. I thought that they were missteps, but I can't say that it was bad because I can't be the judge of television for everybody.
See, I can, and that's easy. However, I will say it's not without redemption. There were, in fact, a few bright spots, even though, like I said, I felt it completely sucked. However, moving on slightly, don't we have a mini feature of some sort?
We do have a mini feature, and this is going to be another mini feature that is just you. It's all you this time. Because, oh, this is Raven.
Hi.
For all you new listeners out there that are joining us this episode, which statistically there's like maybe 0.15 people maybe that are starting with this episode. That's our way of saying that not a whole lot of people are sending us comments and subscribing. You know who you are.
And this is my co-host, Barry Kosh White.
Yes. I could try to say more, but it's just going to sound like I'm
trying to be Barry White.
Like I'm trying too hard, so I won't
see,
do
I don't
that.
Think so. I think you've got the voice.
Nah.
Yeah, all right.
This mini feature, as I stammer my way into it, will begin now.
Mini feature.
And it's going to be about the, was the
C2E2, the Chicago Comic-Con and Exposition. I'm not sure what the other E was. I wasn't paying that much attention. We just called it C2E2. It was a really great Comic-Con.
Entertainment?
I think so.
Exposition? Expo?
I think so. Something like that. I could probably look it up on the brochure that I got.
We'll try to put it in the show notes, a link to the event.
Yeah, the event itself is much more fun to go to. I had a great time. And it's a major, major Comic-Con, if you're not already familiar with it. Both DC and Marvel had huge areas just devoted to them, and there were lines all over the place just to get in and see their stuff. They had a Captain America display, which was all these props that were actually used in the Captain America movie. Much as the movie might piss me off, we can go into that at some other time. I gotta say, the props were way cool. Very well done. I didn't expect any less. Now, I will say that I was introduced to a new comic company, relatively new. They're called Archaea, I believe. And at the last free comic day, I grabbed their stuff. It was the only hardcover comic book that was there. They seem to be mostly oriented towards kids. Among other things, they're continuing the Dark Crystal story. Or, I'm sorry, not the Dark Crystal, the Labyrinth storyline with Hoggle. And it's essentially a prequel. But I've got to say, I really like the writing as well as the art. That's not to say I'm in love with the whole series they put out. But they were pretty good. There were a lot of great guests. And among others, well, the most popular guest was John Barrowman, Captain Jack Harkness from Doctor Who. Unfortunately, one of the least popular guests was Val Kilmer.
I laugh because I've heard some of the stories from the event. I was not there, folks, which is why I'm not talking about it. But I've heard tell of some of the things that happened, including the, let's just say, lukewarm reception.
Well, when John Barrowman when John Barrowman came on stage, it sounded like this. And when Val Kilmer came on stage, it sounded like this. And there was lots of jokes made throughout the rest of the con by everyone. Now, be that as it may, there were a lot of nifty vendors, hundreds of thousands of different comic books and comic displays. I didn't have time to go through all of them. As much as I really enjoyed it, I was only there for a day. This is a shout out as well to Geek Love. They were there, which was kind of cool. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, there was a 2 or 3 episode show on TLC where somebody has started speed dating for basically subculture. People are calling them geeks. We call them subculture because it's not just geeks. But as the guy points out,
it's also nerds and dweebs.
Yeah. But you can get goths in there. You can get, you know, computer types. And it's really great. And the best part about it is, as he points out, if you're in the room looking for, you know, speed date or possibly, you know, seeing if you can hook up, there is something in common or that you have in common with everyone else in that room. You will have at least one thing in common with everyone because you're all at the Comic-Con. You all enjoy some form of science fiction, fantasy, comic books, something. And it's a really great premise. And I got to talk to him for a little bit, and hopefully we might have more information in the future on them.
I think it's a tremendous idea. Makes me sad that when I was at, what was it, the Motor City Comic Con in Novi, Michigan, near Detroit. You were there.
Yeah, it was...
And it makes me wish they had that set up there as well.
Well, and they did for a while. I've seen...
Not when I was there.
I know, Motor City seems to be shrinking and expanding, shrinking and expanding. They're not really sure what they're doing.
I got to meet Captain Benjamin Sisko, Avery Brooks. I got to see Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees from about 30 yards away, and I could tell time is passing for him. And they had... What did they have? They had the Dukes of Hazzard car.
True. One of the General Lees.
They had a General Lee. I think they had a kit from...
See, now, what I remember mostly... They did, but what I most remember is Chase Masterson, who has a lovely voice. If you can get a hold of her album, do it. She's got one of the best renditions of Fever that I've ever heard.
For those of you who are not familiar with the name, Chase Masterson was on Star Trek Deep Space Nine. She played Lita, the Bajoran Dabo girl at Quark's, who dated Bashir for a while, and by the end of the series, spoiler, she married Quark's brother, Rom.
Well, she also, interestingly enough, was recognized when she first came on the show by Avery Brooks as the girl in the Nordic Track commercials. And he's like, wait, didn't you? Yes, yes, I did. But we also got to meet Cliff Simon, who played Ball in the various Stargate series.
Yes.
He's very down to earth. He's a great guy.
Oh, super nice.
His handler, not so much. A little angry, but a great guy overall.
But soon enough in the conversation that we had, because we got to him and there was no one at his table. There was no line.
I don't understand that. Well, I sort of do. He's science fiction. It's not comic. But still, folks.
Well, there was also no line. I think when we got to her, there was no line at Chase Masterson's table either. Avery Brooks had a long line.
Well, yeah, because it's a captain.
Yeah. But Chase Masterson...
Well, she didn't either. She's very personable. She's absolutely beautiful and just a wonderful human being to talk to.
But she had long blonde hair at the con. So true. People might not have recognized her because Lita had shorter red hair. But anyway, to Cliff Simon, who had no line, we got to the table and very approachable, very conversational. And after a few moments of the conversation that we were having with him, his handler, I think, started to realize, oh, they're just having a conversation. Well, I'll just back off then. And he stopped having all that much to say. But my favorite part of Cliff Simon and his table was, he recognizes that the episode, not where his character is introduced, I think this is the second or third appearance of Bob, where he and O'Neill are facing off against each other. He's captured O'Neill.
Oh, yeah.
And kills him over and over again to try to get information. Him. And that's like a fan favorite episode. And he realizes that, and he expressed his confusion. He wasn't quite sure why that episode was so popular with the fans. To which my theory is, it's because it's the tough character that no one's ever been able to beat, and he's broken in that episode. And it makes it very watchable. It's uncomfortable to watch it, but that makes it a milestone. And I'm getting off the point. That's not my favorite part of it. My favorite part of this table, he was not loaded up with a whole bunch of headshots of himself as Baal or any other Stargate memorabilia. He had self-help audio CDs that he wrote and recorded.
I'd completely forgotten about that.
That's his side thing. When he is not acting, he does self-help.
Well, and he's got a great voice, if nothing else.
Not only a great voice, but he uses it well with the things that he says.
Absolutely.
Like we said, he's very nice. I was too scared to approach Lou Ferrigno, who had the table right next to his.
At least I can say, now, Lou Ferrigno has shown up at Motor City Comic Con numerous times, and the first one that I saw him at was in a much bigger auditorium, but it echoed. And I, at the time, didn't know any ASL, that's American Sign Language, mm-hmm. and so I didn't really get a chance to talk to him. And I knew I did try to talk to him a little bit, and it was clear he couldn't hear a damn thing because of all the echoing. For those listeners who don't know, Lou Ferrigno is partially deaf. And so if you talk to him, please make eye contact, enunciate, speak somewhat slowly. He's a very nice guy.
Because this is going to be happening for you all the time, listeners. You're going to be meeting Lou Ferrigno. And, you know,
given who would potentially even be listening to this podcast, they very well might. He still does. He still does the Hulk tours.
Yes.
But he's a good guy. As far as I know, he speaks ASL. Feel free to sign. Most people are not real upset about it. I don't know his personal opinion on it. Next time I see him, I'll ask him.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I noticed that we've been talking about Motor City a while. We got off of C2E2 a bit.
There was just so much to see, to be very honest. They had stand-up comics, which, admittedly, I didn't think were that great, but they didn't give them the best venue. Mm-hmm. I will say, and when I say that, they had a great spot. The problem is, again, the echoing killed the sound system. You couldn't understand most of what they were saying. There was a really interesting $20,000 pyramid type game that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my highlights, honestly, was sitting and watching the cosplay. Yes, there were exceptionally hot girls, but mostly people put some serious time into these costumes. I saw the Scorpion with the full tail and backpack.
The Spider-Man villain.
Yeah. I saw the Rhino. Not perfect, but really, really nice. I saw people in the X-Men costumes that looked like they were out of the movies. I saw various incarnations of Spider-Man, Venom, Carnage, Anti-Venom, comic book characters that I couldn't even identify some of them. And I've been reading comic books for a long time, listeners. While I may not always follow all of them, I can at least tell you who they are. And so, yeah, it was very impressive, the cosplay. People went all out. This is as much to the fans as it is to the people who put it on.
I find myself wishing, this goes back into the vein of the speed dating that you mentioned, if they could set up an online dating website just for convention-type people. One that was free. That would be pretty cool.
I'm chuckling because they sort of do. I forgot what the name of it was. I checked that out a few years ago. They sort of do, because one of the questions on there was, what kind of calculator do you have? And they started listing the various TI models, as well as some of the Casio and the HP ones. And while I might be able to find a date being an engineer on there, it was a touch limited. I do, however, like OkCupid. They seem to be more along those lines. When I did my basic test on it, I actually got a number of really good hits that I went, hey, I'm in a relationship, but I almost want to talk to this person.
I have heard that the matching algorithm on OkCupid is very effective. It's good at using the questions that they give you to answer. I've heard that their programming setup is impressive at matching people that are similar to each other and would get along. So when we create our spinoff podcast through the Jump Date, we can talk more about that in the future. Moving on from that, this is going to wrap up the mini feature, and we're going to move on into the main feature with our discussion of Battlestar Galactica right now.
And now our feature presentation.
And we are back. I'm hoping, listeners, that you're not going to be able to pick up the sound of lawnmowers in the distance outside of the apartment. This is what comes from not being professionals who record in a studio.
Apartment? Don't you mean in the terminal? Because we have our organic grass grown and taken care of in the old ways?
Yes. And our hydroponic lawn is being tended by the garden droids.
And the organic, what are we calling them, minikins that we designed specially for that purpose.
Yes.
That is in no way slave labor, in any way unethical to do so.
Because we're in space. Because it's a science fiction show. Battlestar Galactica is what we are here to talk about today. The reimagined sci-fi original series starting, what, 2002? 2003?
Somewhere around then. I don't honestly know. It came and I won't even say came and gone. It came, waited a while, came again, waited a longer while, waited some more, came, waited a really long time, and then ended.
Mm-hmm. Judging from the way that the DVDs were put out in, like, half seasons a couple times, and then I think a break between a couple of seasons, and then a direct-to-DVD movie giving some backstory on another Battlestar, et cetera, et cetera. And I was not on board when it first came out, so I have no idea in what order these things came out or how long people had to wait for the next seasons. But it shows great podcast research that I can't even tell you the year that it premiered.
Honestly, it kind of all blurs for me because literally it's... to explain what I was saying before was basically the first season came out and then you had to wait about a year.
It started out with the miniseries.
That was, yeah.
Night, parts 1 and 2. I want to say it was like an hour and a half each part.
Something like that. I didn't watch it at the time. I picked it up later, and then you waited about a year. And I'm like, because I remember on Sci-Fi I was watching other stuff and going, geez, I'm glad I'm not watching this show. This would piss me off. And then, okay, we're back. Great. And then we wait like another year and a half for season 3. And I believe that was about the same time that Sci-Fi started instituting the mid-season finales. Dude, we hate those. Whoever's setting up Sci-Fi, I gotta say, I really love the offset programming stuff. We have our great shows here. We have our great shows in January and the summer. And it just, there's always something to look forward to. And there's reruns. Gotta love it. It's also offset with the regular networks. Wonderful. Mid-season finales, annoying.
USA does the same thing.
Well, it's because they're both owned by NBC.
That's true. I can understand why some people don't like it. I personally am a fan only because there's a mid-season finale and then you have to wait for the second half of the season. Yes, you do have to wait, but at the end of the season, there's a shorter wait before you get to the beginning of the next season. So it's taking the big long wait between seasons and it's splitting up that time. So you're not waiting as long.
See, and I just find it irritating. But then again, I grew up in the 70s when you had 30 episodes to a season. You'd hit it, and then you'd hit reruns in case you missed anything.
Right. And it would time out just about right, where they could rerun everything, and by the time they get to the end, you're ready to start the next season.
Oh, God, you were so ready to start the next season, because they would run out of extra episodes of, like, a month beforehand. August was a dry TV season. Oh, it was harsh.
The old days. The good old days we're talking about. These days, it's more common for a series to have, rather than 30 episodes, they have like 21, 22. Sometimes, like with Stargate, you get 20 episodes. And then other times, with most of the USA shows, for example, you're lucky if you get 16. That's for like the shows that they hinge their original programming on. Like Burn Notice will get 16 episodes.
Oh, I was thinking The Walking Dead, 6. Six in the original.
Walking Dead got 6 episodes in season 1. Season 2 had like 10 or 12.
Which I just finished. Gotta say I like it. And I can sympathize with the characters. Yes, they occasionally do phenomenally stupid things.
Yeah.
But it's human. It's reasonable. I understand why they did it. But going back to Battlestar, yeah, the gap between 3 and 4, seasons 3 and 4, was huge. I think it was 2.5 years. And you kept hearing, it's coming back, it's coming back, no, we're really coming back. Yeah, but when? Time's ticking.
When the Sopranos come back, apparently.
Yeah, and season 4, we'll get into it. That's the season I really have a problem with.
That's for later. We're going to discuss season 4, and we're going to discuss all the seasons story-wise in the second half of our discussion. We've broken this up into 4 parts. And first off, we're going to start with the visual aspect. No story. We're just going to talk about the look of the show.
Frankly,
overall,
I don't even think we need to break it up. It was stunning from beginning to end. The whoever's idea and whoever had the overall look of the show, brilliant. Costumes, sets, the space visuals. I loved all the homages they did to the old series, and they just throw them in every once in a while, especially in the last episode or two. Oh, they were brilliant. And it was like, hey, this is really cool. I remember those. When you're pissed off of the series, you're going, that was awesome.
I remember a flashback to the original human Cylon war, and the Cylons that young Adama is fighting are modeled on the Centurions from the original series.
Yep,
they don't absolutely. Look. They're not the revised design. It's the old style, and that was clever. There were a lot of things that were clever, and I was able to appreciate the trip that I took to Seattle, Washington.
Last year. Yes.
Because I went to, it's called the Experience Music Project, EMP. It's like a big museum. There's a lot of stuff that centers around music, but at the time that I went there, they had a an exhibit in the upper level all about Battlestar Galactica. Some original series stuff, lots of reimagined series stuff, full life-sized Cylon Raider from the new series.
That had to have been
right there.
Well, was it a hero model or was it? Because I'm going, I couldn't imagine that thing being anything less than freaking huge.
A hero model?
Yeah, like in Star Trek. I take it you didn't see the auction?
No, I did not.
Junk Gators, for those of you who also did not see the auction, you can look it up, and I believe you can get a hold of it. Paramount decided, you know what, we've got all this Star Trek stuff, all these props, all these costumes and everything. Let's put them up for auction. And so they did. They pretty much put out everything that they've ever had. They labeled it all, and they thought it was going to go for a lot less than it did. Their minimum bids on stuff, some stuff were $10. They were hoping to get maybe $10 for this stuff, and it would go for $200. Mm-hmm. This was normal. The hero models are basically the large size of the various ships. And they're quite large. I want to say the Enterprise D was 6 feet in length, and it had some LEDs in it. And this is what they used to film all the big sequence, the outer space sequences. That hero model, as I recall, was large. It was the largest bid. It went for $500,000. And it was not Bill Gates, which is what I was betting heavily on. As I recall, it was some British fan, and picked it up for $500,000.
Be nice if I could do something like that, but cannot. And no,
this, see, I'd rather build it.
This Cylon Raider was not a hero model because you'll keep in mind, anything exterior for like action shots, they didn't have models. It was all done digitally. This was, it could very well have been the one they used for filming. The Raider that they had in Galactica's hangar bay.
Okay, the one where they're, you know, tromping all over it and ting, ting, ting. What can we find out about them?
They're standing on it. They're crawling underneath it. This is the one that Starbuck crawled up inside and flew around. That big. And they had a Cylon original series era Centurion model standing up right next to it for scale.
Which is freaking awesome. I gotta say, I really, as much as I love the original series, I was perfectly okay with them reimagining it. This is good. They said, we're not trying to recreate, we are reimagining. Okay, you have license. Complete license. I've said similar things about Smallville. The moment you say, we're not trying to recreate, we're just going in a new direction. We thought this would be fun.
Mm-hmm.
You have creative license and go nuts. Now, along the same lines as what you were saying about the Cylons, one of the things I did get to see, not in person, on Treasure Hunters, I think it was, the auction program on Sci-Fi, along the same lines, the NX-01.
Yes, Star Trek Enterprise.
Yeah, the shuttle, it turns out there's an actual full-scale shuttle that is... You can buy it. A costume company picked it up from Paramount for, I think, like $500-$600. Nobody wanted it.
Weird.
And they restored the whole thing. The guy just made it a hobby, and he called Paramount and got the entire inside is restored. It breaks into three parts, so you can film in any direction. It's and you can get inside it. The hatch opens up. I gotta say, I kind of want it. I really do.
I find myself thinking I would just build a house around it. That would be a room in the house, and then just build the rest of it to.
I would put it. I would put it in the library. I honestly would, because that's going to be my special reading place. No, not my special reading place. Yet, dirty things.
You will know when not to disturb me when I'm in my shuttle.
You'd wear the uniform, wouldn't you?
I don't think so. I don't have a uniform.
And you would.
If I did, I'd probably be hiding it until I knew that I was going to get a second date with the girl. And then once I knew I was getting a second date with the girl, then I would let her know I have a uniform.
So you'd stash it in the shuttle. And frankly, I'm not sure I would stash mine because I have the NX-01. I have the shuttle in my house. It's kind of cool. I'm just saying.
I'm becoming embarrassed and a little worried about this particular line of conversation. I might just cut this whole part out. No. Because now I'm getting embarrassed.
Why are you getting embarrassed? This is awesome.
Returning to the visuals. With what you were saying before about whoever was in charge of the visual style for the show, I don't know that we had many television series, certainly science fiction series, that relied as much as Galactica did on the, what can be called, shaky cam now. A lot of handheld cameras, a lot of almost a documentary style feel.
And some places where they did it was appropriate.
Cockeyed angles, snap zooms on people.
It's not always my favorite, but I think they, for the most part, did it pretty well. Normally, I just kind of find it annoying.
If it's overdone, it can be annoying. I do agree that in Galactica, I think they used it fairly well. When it helped with the particular tone of a scene, it'll definitely unsettle you a little bit because you can't just latch on to a particular camera angle. Things just keep moving around. It's all shaky. You don't know exactly where it's going to be looking next. And I put myself into the shoes of the actors, and thinking, this particular filming style must free up a lot of the motion. Because it's clear that it's not a set with just three walls and then it's open. Like,
it does require a much bigger set, yeah.
That might be a little jarring. We had to take a moment. The lawnmowers have returned to our hydroponic grass garden. And we were discussing sets on Battlestar Galactica and the use of cameras. And you could tell it was not, like, for example, Star Trek The Next Generation, the bridge of the Enterprise. The one end of it was not seen as much. It was an enclosed set, but you know that it was mostly cameras and equipment that would dominate at least half of the stage.
Absolutely.
You wouldn't be able to move around a whole lot. But with Galactica, it was pretty clear every set was built to be lived in.
Well, much like Firefly.
I was thinking the exact same thing.
You know, the sets were pretty realistic, actually. You could walk in and walk contiguously from one to the next.
On one level.
Well, yeah. Couldn't do it all the same.
When they originally built the ship, Serenity, for the show, the upper level was all one huge set. You could go into every room, down the catwalks, but if you're going to go down below decks, which is going to lead to the cargo bay.
Right, that was a whole separate set.
I think the engineering section. Those
bits were connected.
Which is why in the movie, when they rebuilt the set, they have a tracking shot that takes you into virtually every place on the ship. You get the cockpit, you get the main walkway, you get the dining area, you get the shuttle access ways, and the cargo area, sick bay, everything.
Yeah.
And they had to do one cut, because they had to physically go from one set to the other. But that's the only cut they made. Other than that, they just went right through the entire ship. Very impressive shot, I thought. I noticed it when I first watched it. I said, wait a minute, are they just walking through the whole... Oh my God.
Well, and
they built the ship.
And they could have done it all virtually. As obviously, we saw that in Sanctuary. Sanctuary didn't have any sets. My girlfriend likes to argue, no, they had some. She doesn't watch the behind the scenes where it's all a green screen. There's nothing. There's the actors and there's green. And occasionally they have some, they have a box or something that's draped in green. So you know where the desk is going to be.
Yeah.
But it was really very impressive. Now, one of the things I got to say that for the most part, I really, really liked about Battlestar, and I can contrast this easily with Star Trek, is I liked the lighting. I know this seems trivial, but you get all these spaceships in not even just series, the movies and such. And the movies are probably the worst about it, particularly the B ones, which we all love. But they have to create a mood. And for some reason, we can't afford light bulbs in space. And so everything is very, very dark. It's always very dark, and you can't see a damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
Star Trek doesn't have that problem. They went, you know what? We can fly across the galaxy. We can light the freaking place reasonably. Battlestar Galactica, kind of in between. They didn't have excessive lighting. Nothing, you know, it wasn't, you know, really all this, and we can see everything. But it wasn't really built for comfort either. This is a military ship. You could see easily.
Mm-hmm.
There was never a problem with deep shadows. But it was a little stark. And I like that. The only problems I had was some of the exterior shots. That was clearly, we're doing it to make it look pretty. Because, yeah, there's not that much light in space. You're just not going to see it. It doesn't reflect it off.
Yeah,
an awful lot.
You have to bend the rules for the exterior shots.
But so like when they're shooting in space. Pew, 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 pew. Yeah, okay, no sound.
Uh-huh.
But it's fun. We're all used to it.
there was a distinct lack of sound in the exterior shots for Battlestar. That's one of the things that they picked up from Firefly, which was, hey, that's right, there is no sound in space, so let's not overdo all this sound stuff. There'd be a little bit, but usually when it had something to do with air.
Well, there's that, and I can live with, you can hear something with the pulsar cannons or the phasers or something. There's an activation that you could possibly hear inside the ship because there's a mechanical or a resonance or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're not, like in the original series, you know, from space. No, come on. It's not happening.
Now, but moving back to the lighting, another benefit of the lighting they used on Galactica is it set the mood very, very well.
Absolutely. It was dank enough.
It's a grim show. It's not a lot of happy, bright colors and you know, dancing on rainbows. It's a pretty depressing show. And not only did it set the mood, but when you have lighting that is stark enough and dim enough to look realistic and not so bright that it's ridiculous and overproduced, it helps the sets to look more lived in. They look more natural.
Absolutely it does. And like I said, it was a military ship, and having been on real-life military ships, they're pretty brightly lit, but they're also painted gray.
Yeah.
If you've got dark interiors, you're not going to reflect as much light, and I had no problem with that. That's just the way the society did it, and it was perfectly reasonable.
I think that covers the visuals pretty well. We really like how the show looked. We liked the costumes. We liked the sets and the lighting. The special effects I thought were very impressive.
Yeah, I have no negative critiques on any of the visuals.
I saw it on the day that we were recording this. I caught an episode of Warehouse 13, and
yes, that's right. They're running a marathon in anticipation of the next season coming up.
And not super impressed with the effects. I mean, it's not like they're awful.
They're cute, but that's not really the main part of the show.
But you can tell that they're definitely special effects. You're not going to get fooled into thinking it's real. Whereas on Galactica,
oh, seamless.
They did a very nice job of watching all the details. Now, and in addition to having things look right, things were behaving right as well.
Yes.
When they decided to show us what
gravity
happens,
was consistent.
When they decided to show us what happens when a ship goes into the faster than light travel, it will disappear. And the space that was occupied by the ship, whatever is around it, will move in to take up that space. Which, when you're in space, you can't tell all that often. But there is an episode, I want to say it's in season 4, when a raptor comes out of the docking bay, and it jumps immediately. And a huge section of the ship right next to where the raptor was got torn up because of the displacement effect of the jump to faster than light.
Well, and there's
they usually don't pay attention to that sort of thing in these science fiction shows, but with this one they did, and I was very impressed with how they would keep things realistic.
And that's part of the realism part. That's based on our best theories about how hyperspace would work. And it's essentially, it's similar to teleportation, such as like Nightcrawler. You're basically jumping into another, almost another dimension.
Yeah.
It's really synonymous with that. But by doing so, you've left normal space. While everyone says it's a vacuum, it's actually not a true vacuum. And you are going to pull stuff. And if anything's close enough, as we saw with the ship, and then when you come back out, you're like, hey, what's that? Uh-oh. Galactica, my bad. Would you like me to tow this back?
Well, in this particular instance, this was a little spoiler. If you haven't seen it, be careful, because we're going to start getting into points where if you haven't seen the show, this might be dropping some story elements that you don't want to know. So we'll just call it spoilers. Spoilers starting now. And in this instance that I was referring to with the ship jumping into faster than light right outside the ship, this was Boomer, and yeah, she didn't care.
Well, true. Hence the, my bad, would you like me to tow this back? Oh,
no, she wouldn't say, bad. No, she wouldn't say my bad. She said,
that's not her thing.
I just stole this baby so y'all can bite me.
Hey, Mark.
So this segues well into performances throughout the series, which I thought were, by and large, done very well.
I agree. They were completely stellar. I don't have anything negative to say about the actors as well, but then again, you had massive talent.
Edward James Olmos is, he's always good. I've never seen him give a bad performance. And there was no indication during the run of this series that the actor was phoning it in or that he was bored with it or not wanting to do it.
I've got to say that's true of everyone. No one phoned it in. Everyone actually tried, even when sometimes the script wasn't so good. The script I have some issues with, but the performance is top-notch, and anybody who's seen any of these actors outside of this, particularly, I'm thinking Trisha Helfner in...
Helfer.
Okay, so please don't get mad at me, but
bad
I did catch her, however, I did
fan
catch
fail.
Except that I caught her performance in Supernatural.
Ah.
And it was very, very different. She had a different look, which I've got to say, that woman has an amazing ability to change looks, which you saw in the in Battlestar Galactica,
mm-hmm.
to differentiate, quote, six from the other sixes.
Caprica Six is what they eventually called her.
But it was just...
Yeah, she can change up
her... Incredibly versatile.
She can change up her appearances pretty effectively.
The actress playing Starbuck.
Katie Sackhoff.
Yeah, there's a whole different look for her as well. Because normally, her hair is, I've been given to understand, is more like Annette Bening's. It's really short, and she carried it off. She carried off the look naturally. Now, I'm talking about her overall look. That's part of the visuals, but her performance, again, very believable. Really liked her stuff.
Believable to the point where when she's doing things that are not likable, I'm starting to not like her. Because there are points where Starbuck, I will admit, I think almost more than anyone else on the show would just really get on my nerves quite often. And it's the way they wrote the character.
Which is a significant departure from the original. The original was much more of a playboy, and frankly, I thought this direction was interesting. I really did. And I think making her a girl actually helped with that a little bit. It gave you a reason for more of the angst, whereas with Dirk Benedict's version in the original, there was just no way. It wouldn't have made sense. Now, one of the things I really liked as a performance, as well as kind of an homage, was bringing back the original Apollo.
Yes.
That was cool.
Richard Hatch, who played Tom Zarek in the reimagined series, started off as a terrorist, eventually went all the way up to being, spoilers, vice president of the colonies. I did recall that when he was introduced into the series, wait a minute, he was on the original. Very nice. And he would always give good performances. Mary McDonald, I don't think I've seen her perform this well in anything else. She was in Independence Day. And
Are you Sisters. Kidding me? Dances with Wolves.
Excuse me. Oh, that's right. That's right. I knew that. I just...
How about Sneakers?
I said that.
Yeah.
I just said that now.
I did not hear you say that because I was so outraged. I'm going, oh my God, she's such a top-notch actress.
And not to say that she's been bad in other things, but...
She has been cast in other things that were not nearly up to her level. And I understand, you want to be a working actress, you take what you got.
Mm-hmm.
But much like Samuel L. Jackson, the performance is always top-notch. It's stellar. No matter how bad Snakes on a Plane, the script, although Snakes on a Plane kind of sits in a whole different category. I'll discuss that some other time. It was way funny. If you haven't seen it, it really is worth watching for how bad it is.
with Mary McDonnell, who played President Laura Roslin on Battlestar Galactica, I would have to say that her character... I'm jumping the gun a little bit, getting into character arcs, but just to say this now, we'll get back to it when we get to the character arc section. Her character, I think, changed almost more than any other throughout the course of the series.
I agree. Visually and personality-wise, there was a massive amount of growth of that character. In varying directions.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I don't see why we can't just go right to character arc.
Well, as far as performances, there was... What else do I want to bring? Aside from having Tom O'Pennicott, who played Hilo in Stargate, who also would return a little bit to science fiction when he starred in Dollhouse.
Yes.
I think he always did a fine job. Grace Park, I think, did a really nice job as Boomer and Athena.
Yes.
And all the other eights that she played throughout the series. Not only do I think she did a wonderful job, but I had a super crush on her the entire time I was watching.
Well, and she did do a really good job. And again, multiple looks. It was very impressive for any of the actors. Dean Stockwell.
Yes. Yes.
You did not like him or any version of him. Oh my God. You were just like, all right, kill that whole series. Just mothball him.
And I was...
Oh, fool.
I was very pleasantly surprised to see Lucy Lawless show up on the show.
I couldn't even identify her at first. It's so impressive.
It took me a minute. And then
yeah, holy crap, that's Lucy Lawless!
It helped me out that I have been watching Spartacus. On Stars, and she is she's been in actually all of the first season, the kind of half season. It was a 6-episode prequel mini season that they did between production schedules of seasons 1 and 2, and then they brought her character back in season 2 of Spartacus, and she does an amazing job. Not just because she takes her clothes off quite a bit, but that certainly doesn't hurt, because I don't even care how old Lucy Lawless is. I don't know how old she is, but she's aging well.
Well,
from back in the days as Xena, I think she looks better now than she did when she was playing Xena.
Well, much like Jennifer Aniston, although not to the extent of Jennifer Aniston, I don't think there's anybody who works out to the extent of Jennifer Aniston. She earned that figure. Charisma Carpenter is another one.
Mm.
Taught aerobics. Did lots of very active stuff in sports all the way through high school. There's a number of actresses that are like that. It's like, wow, you earned that figure, and good on you. And it's not even just, wow, you're hot. I mean, there's that too, but you gotta admire the dedication and the discipline. It's not always easy, and a lot of actors will complain about it because, frankly, it is tough.
And I've been working the past 3 months, and I'm down 10 pounds. So. Yeah, I realize that it's not the easiest thing in the world.
But honestly, Lucy Lawless, I applaud her especially because after Xena, for a while, she was having some trouble getting any real work. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'd see her occasionally, little spots, but they're almost all spoofs of Xena. Like, and Just Shoot Me and some other stuff. And then she got things like Bedtime Stories. Oh my God, that's Lucy Lawless? She got this. Holy crap, that's Lucy Lawless?
One
very underrated actress.
One episode of USA's Burn Notice. where she guessed it as the villain of the week. And did a wonderful job. And looking amazing. She's always looking amazing.
Well, like I said, she's...
Speaking of looking amazing, let's go back to Grace Parks again, because she was... Sorry.
Well, actually, she wasn't looking amazing in Bedtime Stories. They really downplayed her an awful lot.
Oh, okay.
She was the villain and not very attractive, but it was... I mean, I'm not saying she was ugly. I'm just saying they really downplayed her to plain. And that was partly why you're like, holy crap. I mean, even master height. The woman's 6 foot tall. That's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, very impressive. Her performance is, like I said, very underrated actress, in my opinion.
One episode of the two-season HBO original series Flight of the Conchords.
Ouch.
That's not ouch. She was hilarious.
I'm sure she was.
But... she was hilarious. And I thought it made a whole lot of sense because Flight of the Conchords is about two New Zealand musical comedians. And she's from New Zealand.
Yes, she is.
So they brought her on that episode. I thought it was wonderful. When I saw her walk, I said, wait a minute, she looks familiar. Who is that? Oh, my God.
So much like Claire Forlani,
mm-hmm.
she picks up and drops accents. You would never guess, watching their performances, that they don't speak American. This is not their natural accent. I mean, Lucy Lawless is not... it's not as thick as Claire Forlani's.
Let's clarify. We mean American English.
Yes.
We don't mean American as its own language. Okay.
I tend to separate the dialects by, New Zealand, British. I speak Mexican. I don't speak Spanish. Anybody who speaks Spanish will go, oh, yes, I understand exactly what you're saying. That's my pronunciation. It's not, it's not great, and it's not going to do me well in Castile.
Yeah.
They'll understand me. They won't like what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
My French is Quebec. It's not Parisian.
Moving to accents, we'll make this the last note about performances after I say that the actor who played Baltar.
Oh.
I think he did... He did okay with what he was given, but I don't like what he was given. We'll get to that in character arcs. But my last note on performance is, I did not... It was, I want to say, between seasons 2 and 3, when I watched a behind-the-scenes little featurette show that I obtained with the series. And the intro is different actors who are... They broke up the intro monologue for the show. We're going to take you behind the scenes, and you'll see this and this. And they broke it up amongst most of the actors. And Jamie Bamber, who played Apollo in the new series, when it was his turn, that was the first time that I had any idea that he was from the UK.
Oh.
I had no idea. So of all the... accents that are covered up or changed in this or most other television series, I would put him on Hugh Laurie House level.
Oh, that's impressive.
Of accent coverage. I had no clue.
The other one along those lines would be, and this is a complete departure, is the Dresden Files.
Oh yeah.
Dead cross. The Americans played by somebody from Britain. The pseudo British type, Florida. Holy crap, people!
What's the name of the actor who plays Harry Dresden? I can't remember. Blackstone.
Yeah, Paul Blackstone, I believe it is.
He did a wonderful job, and I think they let him keep his accent when he guest starred on an episode of, wait for it, Burn Notice.
He also gets to keep his accent in his regular show, which is why we can't do the Dresden Files anymore. Bastards.
I thought they just dropped Dresden Files in favor of Painkiller Jane.
No, well, they did. And then they got rid of Painkiller Jane.
Yeah.
Bastards, because that's another Christiana Loken, talented actress, very talented, but what are you going to do? Oh, wait, maybe, put us in charge of it and leave us alone. But we can help. So, moving on in character arcs. I've got to say, that's one of the things I liked about the new series, was some of the stuff they did, it made things a little more complex. It wasn't just, the Cylons are trying to kill all life. They don't agree, they're machines, and we can't do anything about it. I've got to say, I thought it was a little dumb that nobody actually tried apologizing and making amends.
Sorry,
we were shits. Maybe we could work this out.
Any sort of peace accord. It just did not enter into the equation.
Yeah.
And that was reflected in the character arc of the president, who at the beginning she was soft-spoken. She wanted to get input from as many people as possible and then make her decision. By the end of the series, she's saying, we're doing it this way. You don't like it?
Yeah.
F*** you.
We're just crushing, and that's how it works. To be very honest, I thought it was the best one to me was, in fact, Baltar's. But you've got to contrast and compare that with the original. The original, I am evil. Ha 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 ha. I am overlord. I'm going to go work with the Cylons. You want me to give up my humanity? Well, Beat's getting killed. Sure, I'll take a robotic body. And now I am the bad guy. Ha ha ha. Whereas in this one, no, it's not in the slightest bit clear-cut. It's very muddy.
Here's the thing. It is very muddy, his character path. But at times, it's almost too muddy. Because
that I have to agree with.
The vision of Six that is with him from the very beginning, the one that only he can see and that only talks to him, they don't tell you who or what that is until literally the final scene in the final episode.
Yeah.
So, throughout the entire show, we don't know who this disembodied person is that is talking to Baltar, and that voice is guiding him in most of the decisions that he makes. So,
Mocking him in most of the decisions he makes.
So, stepping up and saying, I want to be president. Getting elected president. Taking the fleet down to the planet. Getting taken over, being complicit with the Cylons and not fighting back, getting back with the humans, staying with the Cylons, back and forth. Am I a Cylon? Maybe? I don't know. Let me try to find out. And then he starts building up a cult. And I never once, through any part of the series, thought that he was making his own decisions. I felt that he was just being led around by the nose or something else by the invisible Six. That was talking just to him. The only time that I saw him making decisions for himself was before the attack in the premiere miniseries. After that, he was just doing what the voice told him to, and that doesn't help us because we have no true intentions or motivations to latch onto because he doesn't have any of his own. I'm sure it made sense. I'm sorry, I'll let you go. Just one second. In just one second, I'll let you go.
We're going.
It makes it difficult for me to follow the storyline, and I know that the writers and the producers and the showrunners, I'm sure that they knew what Baltar was thinking and where he was going with it, but they do...
I'm sure we'll get to it in a second.
I'm sure they didn't sometimes, but in other times, I'm sure they had an idea. Or when they came up with one, they would put it into effect. But the way in which they did it is very similar to if anyone reads comic books. I equate it to Grant Morrison and his comic book writing. He knows what is happening in a story, but you don't. And he doesn't do the best job at telling the story in a way that brings you along as it progresses. Sometimes it seems to me that when Grant Morrison writes a comic book, and thus with Battlestar, it seems to me that when the writers are putting together a character arc, as long as they know what's going on, they're fine. And then they write it and they put it out there. But it's like they didn't bring in someone else to say, hey, since you don't know where this is going, does this make sense?
No.
Oh, then we should probably rewrite it so it makes more sense to someone who doesn't know what's inside our head.
See, I would equate that style of writing more towards Hemingway, where it's the tip of the iceberg, which, by the way, I can't stand. It annoys me to no end if you don't ever show the rest of it. There's more going on beneath the surface. But if it's making significant decisions and you're left going, what? I'm sorry, you left me back there about, however long.
I felt that quite a bit in the series.
Now, I actually don't ascribe it to Hemingway style writing. I ascribe it more to Alan Moore and cohorts in V for Vendetta.
Yeah.
We're writing without a Bible. We're just going to put this out. And we're not really sure where we're going. we kind of have an idea. We know our overall message is we're kind of pissed at the government, but we're not really sure, and we want to keep it dark. We're not sure where. I have to agree to some extent with the Baltar stuff. He was, for the most part, being led around by the nose. He would show resistance, and he would pay for that resistance. Sometimes getting beaten.
Or he would show resistance, and then with no rhyme nor reason, he would drop that resistance and just do what he was told.
Yeah.
A lot of his decisions, I could not see why he was making them.
Well, and that started being sort of the backstory. And that's one of the things I appreciated. In the original, like I said, Baltar, bad guy. In this one, he's really pretty much a victim. And you can really sympathize with him, which you absolutely could not in the first one.
Yeah.
And almost everybody I know that's seen both of them really enjoyed that part. You looked at the backstory when he originally was president, and the Cylons are in, and sign the treaty. We're going to keep killing people. Sign the treaty. Crap, and I'm going to be viewed as a traitor, and I'm not as worried about that, but this is a bad treaty. But it's slightly better than the alternative. He had nowhere to go. He had no outs. And he genuinely cared about people, because they do recall his name is Dr. Baltar.
Mm-hmm.
He's a medical doctor. He's got a huge amount of empathy, and he's being forced to make people suffer in horrible ways. Oh, yeah, I can see that snapping somebody.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, being led around after that because, well, not a lot of person left. And I think that's where the whole cult thing came out because, honestly, he didn't seem to be in charge of that. He just didn't want to work anymore.
Yeah.
I'm going to go off in the corner, smoke a whole lot of bowls. And when I say a bowl, I'm talking, like, with lids. We're going straight Cheech and Chong on this one. And pretty much just leave me there. Yeah. Leave me there, and I'll take care of myself.
He wound up the leader of a cult, and we couldn't really figure out exactly how he ended up as a leader of a cult, and at no point did it seem like he wanted to be a leader of a cult. What did he want?
Yeah, it's less the Hemingway and more the Alan Moore.
It got to the point where it seemed, oh, what does he want from this cult? Well, to get laid, because this cult is nothing but women.
Which, not a bad thing. My opinion.
Not a bad thing, necessarily. But
not that I'm suggesting you out and all make cults just so you can sleep with women.
Yeah,
No, that is bad.
That would be bad.
But they formed around him and just, you know, jumped on him. And it's not like he was even asking for it. So, you know, hey. No, stop. I'm going to fight you off. Yes, come on. Who's going to do that?
Jumped on him. All right, moving on to a different character, because I've gone on enough about Baltar. It boils down to I didn't understand him or what he was doing throughout the series. But as another example of the producers and the writers saying, let's make this change and see what we can do with it, was Apollo leaving fleet service and joining the Quorum of 12 and becoming a politician.
Yeah, that was a really interesting one as well.
It was interesting, but it's very sudden, it seemed to me.
It was, but he was having issues with his dad. It's a reasonable story arc on that one. Again, contrasting it, I really like that he wasn't always in agreement with his father in the first one. He pretty much, yes, dad, no, dad, I, dad, mm-hmm. I'm going with whatever you say, dad. And there were good reasons for it.
There was a rift between those two characters from the beginning in this series. And sure, they would disagree on stuff, but they would always come back around and still be able to work together. And it didn't seem like there was enough special about the trial of Gaius Baltar to make Apollo say, you know what, I'm out, I'm done, I'm going to go put on a suit and be a politician now. It just seemed to come not entirely out of left field, but a little quickly out of left field. They could have set that up better.
And honestly, you see more of that as the seasons go on. The first season, well thought out. Second season, not quite as well. Third season, we seem a touch rushed. In fourth season, come on, did you really have to end the series this way? Like, another character arc, Starbuck. Here's this great, multifaceted character.
Here we go.
That's got all these... I'm not going on forever, I'm just saying. She's got this...
I know it.
They had potential. And then they went, crap. Well, what do we want to do? Let's make her mystic and crazy. And losing her mind and her top pilot abilities. And eventually, spoiler, we'll just make her an angel after we've killed her off. What?
Yes, you did hear that correctly. Starbuck is an angel. Not the Starbuck we've been seeing the entire series.
No, only after I want to see...
Halfway through season 3,
yes.
Starbuck dies. Boom.
But they don't really reveal that. They just make it a mystery, and I don't understand. I'm angsty. Wow, you're quite the angsty angel when you're alone. Oh my god, it was terrible writing. And then, yeah, it was pretty much the end. You could tell they went...
Did I fall asleep?
Crap. We did all this stuff with Starbuck. What are we going to do? We forgot to write her in. Let's make her an angel. We'll finish it that way. Let's just throw a great big heaping mass of Deus Ex Machina on it.
I was waiting for...
Oh, I hate that.
We're over an hour into recording, and it took that long for you to bring Deus Ex Machina into the discussion.
It was the worst example of it. It's one of the all-time worst examples ever of that. It was inappropriate, ill-thought. Seriously, those writers had to have been drunk on that last episode. I was pissed. And the whole fourth season was so depressing to drop that. Oh my gods. I honestly would have dropped the series after that. Forget if they'd ever actually gotten Earth like they did the original series.
They did get that, Earth. We saw Earth. It was all
Earth.
Yeah,
it was really Earth. But it was... Like I said, if they got into it like in the original series where, oh look, turns out they have a thinner atmosphere, but they also have much lower gravity, and we're working it in, and the whole bit. That was kind of interesting. I actually liked that. Okay, I was 6. But, you know, I kind of liked it. It was interesting. This, after that, you're done. That's it. That's why I didn't watch Caprica. I was like, I can't deal with this stupidity. Rampant stupidity any longer. And they had Eric Stoltz. I love Eric Stoltz. An incredible actor in his own right. But, oh.
So, yeah, Raven doesn't like what they did with the character arc for Starbuck. If you haven't gotten enough spoilers already, this is going to be some big time spoilers. At the end of season 3, when we find out that there are 4 Cylons in the fleet that we did not know were Cylons before.
4 or 6?
They revealed 4.
Oh, that's right, 4 more, because we had a total of 13, and we already knew about the 9. Oh, I'm sorry, we knew about 8 of them, and then we finally got the final one.
We knew about 7, and then there was the final 5. 4 of which
were
revealed...
Oh, that's right, it went to 12, not 13.
4 of which were revealed at the end of season 3. And that's when they revealed that crew chief Galen Tyrrell.
Yep. Which explains why Ian Boomer did so well.
Colonel Saul Tai.
Which, yeah.
You have Sam, whatever his name was, Starbuck's estranged husband.
Right.
And
then another relatively minor character.
Yeah, the president's personal assistant.
Who, that actress, again, saw her in Supernatural. Underrated. Mm-hmm. I like her. She's quite a good actress. And I like especially that she's trying to make it in mainstream movies rather than just falling back on Bollywood. Because she's from India and mm-hmm. has strong ties there. She could easily make it as a Bollywood actress.
Yeah.
And she's like, nope, I don't want to do Hollywood.
You're going to stay here. And some people find it odd that the Cylons are activated by hearing all along the Watchtower. Which you would think, wait a minute, either that song has some serious staying power to still be around way in the future like that, or somewhere is going on here. But
actually, I can
don't think too hard about it.
I can explain it very easily. Jumpers, go to YouTube, type in Axis of Awesome 4-chord song.
Oh yeah,
and that it really does explain it. It's known in musical theory. Up to 4 chords, but the fewer chords you can use for a song, the more successful it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, we do support Acts of Awesome. They are hysterical. Please go watch them.
They're very fun.
And watch multiple versions of that four card, by the way. They have put out multiple versions, and they're all hysterical.
Nice. The character of Commander Adama, who eventually became Admiral Adama throughout the series, he didn't really change a whole lot. You could tell he was getting pretty jaded and grumpy by the end of it.
Everything's going wrong, no matter what he does.
Yeah, he was...
And he's taking flak for it.
He's trying to keep his ship together by the end of the series. The ship is breaking because it's old and it's taking a lot of punishment, so it's starting to fall apart. He falls in love with the president. She's dying of cancer.
Yeah.
He takes them to Earth. Earth is a burnt end of a matchstick. Things just ain't going his way. And then, oh yeah, that's right. His best friend is a Cylon.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch.
My best friend, he's lost his eye. He's a Cylon. Oh, and his ex-wife, or I'm sorry, his dead wife, comes back in the picture, and she's pissed.
Yeah, and
wow.
And not only that, but she's a Cylon, too.
Yeah.
God damn it.
With centuries of knowledge already programmed into her. Oh, and now Ty remembers his time on Earth.
Well, he remembers a little bit of it, yeah. And then the rest of the hidden Cylons start to remember stuff as well. Now... As far as character arcs, and we're talking about those Cylons, this makes me think of Tyrell, who I really liked. I liked his character. He started off as a pretty minor character. He's the guy who is in charge of all the deckhands that fix the ships and refuel them and everything.
He seemed grumpy towards the end.
Well, yeah.
I mean, but that's just it. I mean, wake up, I'm grumpy. I'm going to act, I'm grumpy. I'm going to go to bed, I'm grumpy.
Okay, he's
they
gone
didn't
through.
Give him a whole lot.
He's gone through everything that all the rest of the characters have gone through. He married Callie, one of his deckhands, who is not the person that he originally wanted to be with. He wanted to be with Boomer because he was still in love with Boomer. He settled for Callie, even though Callie would call it settling, but he did settle for her because she was there. She's human, and he thought he was human as well. So they get together. Their marriage isn't going great. Then he finds out he's a Cylon. Then his wife dies. Then he finds out that one of the other hidden Cylons killed her.
Which I felt that was an appropriate response.
The response is when he found out that Tori is the name of the female Cylon that killed his wife. Yeah, just straight killed her. Once.
Well, he did announce that he was an Ego Montoya.
Stop. Once he found out, you could see it in his face. He turned and looked at her. She got scared out of her mind. He just reached over, put her up against the wall, snap, dead.
Yeah, perfectly reasonable.
Yeah. Even though that action ruined their chances of a lasting peace between humans and Cylons that they were literally at that moment trying to make happen. But he turned and he killed her, and now that chance is out the window. And then what happens? One of my least favorite parts of the series, Dean Stockwell playing what was he? He was a one, wasn't he?
Well, there was two. I can't remember. He was one of the low numbers.
Two was Thielman, the one who was fixated on Starbuck.
Then he might have been a one. Either he was a low number. I remember that.
I think he was a one. And what does he do? Things are going nuts, and the Cylons are getting mad. They're going to start attacking. The humans are mad. Everyone says, what's happening? Our attempt to fix everything has just gone wrong. He says, frack! Puts a gun in his mouth and pulls the trigger. No, you have been the mastermind of all the bad Cylons chasing the humans and the rebel Cylons.
Well, he was
for over a season and a half.
He actually was about... That was not an unreasonable reaction in my case, or in my thought, because... He was about to get outed that you've been pushing stuff and being shady, and you're doing this not really to the help and great empire of the Cylons. You're mostly doing this for yourself, and you're getting people killed, and you're making this worse than it could be. You singularly are what's behind no peace. And
a lot of people knew that already, which is why it meant all that much more when he said, all right, you give us this knowledge, we will stop chasing you. We will stop fighting you.
Well, and that's just it. The rest
he
of the
opened
Cylons,
the door.
Yeah, well, that's just it. The rest of the Cylons weren't really on board by that time. They were kind of going, you know, we're getting kind of sick of this fighting as well. And his characters were really the ones that were going, no, we must do this, and we're totally intolerant, and nah, you're really pretty much just power hungry. And just as they're about to get outed, oh crap. And yeah, I think suicide, such as it is for Cylons, was an appropriate response. Rather than be, say, tortured to death.
No, it was, I think it had been made pretty clear that he was manipulating things to be the way he wanted them. Not for the greater good, but for the way he wanted it.
Absolutely.
And then he made the decision, you know what? My way's not working. We'll stop fighting. We'll call a truce. The hidden Cylons will give us back the technology so we can resurrect ourselves and download into new bodies. Once they give us that, we will leave you humans alone. We will back off. We're going to let you do your thing. We'll never bother you again. He and his entire line of Cylons decided to do that. And it's not that it was going to be made clear, hey, by the way, this guy's been a manipulative bastard. No, it was just, wait a minute, they were going to do this, but now Tyrell killed Tori, and now things are, like, exploding or something. Frag, bang. No, there was no reason to do that, but they needed that character to go away and go away quickly so they could move on to the rest of the finale. So they just had him eat a bullet,
I'm not suggesting it wasn't kind of weak, but I still got to say, I think it was partly because, yeah, he knew he was going to get outed, basically being a shifty bastard. And the rest of the Cylons were going to go, yeah, you need to come here. We got a discussion to have with you. I'm hitting my fist into my palm as I do this.
I don't know.
It was weak. That's possible. It was weak. No question.
It's possible. I'm just not sure that I
think it was really more for the emotional satisfaction because you hated that character by then.
Yeah.
You know?
Hated the character but loved the performances.
Yes, absolutely. Again, Dean Stockwell. Brilliant. Freaking brilliant. Right from the boy with the green hair all the way through Quantum Leap.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond.
So I think with all this discussion we've done about characters, I think we've covered
most of the story,
story arcs pretty well.
Except the final resolution.
There's not really a whole lot to say about it. The final resolution turns out that recurring line you've been hearing, all this has happened before.
Yeah,
there's a reason, because it's happened before. This whole saga of humanity has been going in a loop.
See, now that with the Capra 6 and the Baltar Angels, I thought that was clever.
Yes.
I will give them that.
The disembodied Caprica 6 that's been talking to Baltar, and as you find out, I can't remember exactly when you find it out, but you come to learn that Caprica 6, the actual physical Caprica 6, has a disembodied Gaius Baltar that talks to her.
That was in at least season 4, and I believe season 3 as well.
I think that's when they brought that in.
But, yeah, the reason I'm laughing and cautious motion, wait, hold on, let me get this out, because one of my favorite parts of the series, and again, it was just one of those little bits they drop in, it was actually a light comedic bit in the final season, which was so depressing.
Final episode.
Yeah. And it's basically, they're in this gunfight, and they're on opposite sides, and they can see, and wait, you can see them? Each actor says that, because it's like, I thought I was the only one who could see these people. And it was awesome, it was very funny, it was one of those aha moments, and you're right there with them, and it was very funny. Later they said they were angels. Okay, I don't care if they're angels or not. They're walking down a street of the new Earth, and they've...
Translates to modern day big city.
Basically, they'd gotten that level of technology, and this was the fourth one they were saying. There was Earth, there was Kobol, which explains the Lords of Kobol and all that, and this is the fourth one through. And do you think they're going to get any better? No, I don't think they will. Okay, that was at least interesting. However, when they got off the ships, yeah, another spoiler, they've decided... Technology is evil, not our dumbass use of it. No, technology is evil, so let's get rid of anything more complex than a Stone Age hammer. That's right, a rock.
We should make it clear that when we say when they get off the ship, it's when they get off the ship onto the planet that they found, which is not habitable. It's very Earth-like. Basically Earth. They found Earth before there was any real civilization there. There was like some aboriginal tribes that were already there, but... It was a habitable planet that they've been looking for so long.
And it's the last 10-minute wrap-up of the whole series. And everyone's like, oh, technology is awful. Look at what we did with the Cylons. Not we mistreated them. Not we were dicks. Not maybe we should learn from our mistakes. Let's go back to the Stone Age. We don't need antibiotics. Our babies won't die from the various things that happen to babies before any kind of medicine or technology. Let's give it all up. Rational people do that.
They took their orbital vessels and they sent them away.
Because the raw materials aren't important either.
They let the remaining Cylon, Sam, who was comatose, he had been shot in the brain, so he couldn't function as a person anymore. They linked him in with all the rest of the ships, and he piloted all of the spacefaring vessels into the sun, and the colony of, like, 38,000... Well, a lot of people died during Gaeta's uprising. What's this? Felix Gaeta led an uprising? Yes, he did. That was also kind of sudden.
And kind of dumb.
But I do like his just desserts at the end. That was nice.
Yeah.
So the 30-odd thousand people that survived, and they're on the planet, and they all agreed, we're going to send the ships away. They kept, like, I'm sure, basic tools, but nothing super technological, because they wanted to start from the beginning and not have all the technology that allowed them to make and then poorly treat Cylons in the future, which both Raven and I agree doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because keep watching the show, give it a couple minutes, and it flashes forward 10,000 years, and, well, they've rediscovered technology. What do you know?
And the fact that metal is a good thing in your life. It makes it possible to, I don't know, not have to chip out a flint knife. Yeah, try it sometimes, jumpers. There's a whole archaeological school on how to do it. It's not easy, and it's not easily rediscovered. It's a pain in the ass. I say this from experience.
We're just going to take a quick moment to point out to you folks that he's not being patronizing to you, listeners. He's being patronizing to the crew of Galactica.
Oh, absolutely.
And the colony that went to the planet. They can't actually hear him, but he's still taking on the patronizing tone anyway. So don't take it personally.
No, it's not to you. It's absolutely to the idiotic writing stuff. That's my general opinion of it.
This was the moment of the podcast that I was most worried about, because I know how he gets during any discussion of the final episode of Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, the
he gets like this.
The lowering from, I use important and big words like mellifluous correctly, and then, you know, kind of denigrate down to blah. Because, really, that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what I was referring to.
Yes. Yeah, I don't need to be articulate. They suck.
So, if you take Raven's viewpoint of it, you're not going to want to watch the series, because you're not going to want to see this final episode or the final half of season 4 and see how they ruined everything. But you can also view it a different way. Through good storytelling, through bad storytelling, what's more important is how they tell the story as far as performances and back to the visual aspect.
Oh, absolutely.
And the staging and filming and the way that an episode is constructed. Now, if one of the ingredients is not a great script and a poorly thought out plot line, well, that's unfortunate. But that's not the only part of the show. So if you take it as a whole, it's easier to accept, which is why I tend to like more television shows than other people. Because I look at it as a whole, and I don't find one thing that I dislike and let it ruin the whole thing for me. And if that's what other people do, then that's perfectly reasonable.
Frankly, though, for me, how you end something is very important.
Oh, yeah.
I've killed book series because of it. The Tarot series by Piers Anthony, don't even bother. You're going to start off good, then you're gonna it's going to go kind of weird, and then he'll sort of resolve it, and then it's going to suck. Dude, really? I wasted all that time for you to just piss all over your own work?
Not necessarily a waste. It might not be a waste to other people.
Well, and that's just it. I'm gonna liken Battlestar Galactica's writing and their plots and all that to Shakespeare. There's a few shining moments, but for the most part, it's poor writing. Start to finish. Yeah, you heard it. Get over it. Ask any history major. We're not in love with the language use. Sometimes, however, there are some brilliant moments in Shakespeare. Love parts of it. Small, occasional parts. Generally pretty poor writing. Go read the Greeks. You'll see some real writing. And he had access to them because he referenced them.
So on the note of talking about...
Shakespeare sucks?
How apparently Shakespeare sucks and you should go read the Greeks. That seems a good spot to tie off our discussion. Battlestar Galactica, a sci-fi channel original series. Overall, would you recommend the show?
I would recommend it if you've seen the original as a contrasting compare, or if you really want to see some brilliant performances. All by itself, I'm putting it up with the most recent Second Earth series.
So, would you recommend this series to other people?
Yeah, not so much, really.
That's not recommend from Raven. I would recommend go ahead and give it a watch. These shaky story elements that come in later on in the series might make things a little bit less enjoyable, but the first half of the series, I think they did a bang-up job. It looks great, sounds great, the performances are great, and the storylines are not awful. And then later on, they may get to be not as good as it was in the beginning, but by then, you have started to care enough about some of the characters that you want to see what happens.
Yeah, but it's still sort of like finding out that Santa Claus is really the icky neighbor next door, and all those toys they were giving you were really just creepy ways to get into your bedroom.
What kind of neighborhoods do you live in? Where are you taking us? What's happening here?
That's what I'm talking about with Battlestar Galactica. I don't want to go to that neighborhood. Ew.
No, you're not making sense. You're just being hateful.
Yes, I am being hateful because they pissed me off.
You're just being hateful. Stop it.
No.
If you have no reason to watch the show after listening to this episode, I'll give you one decent reason. Grace Park, who plays Boomer, and Athena, is gorgeous. Not just, oh, she's super hot. No, she's just gorgeous.
I'm still going to give it to Trisha Helfner.
Again, you f***ed it.
Awesome.
Helfer.
I don't care.
Helfer.
The pretty girl in the red dress and the brown hair and the blonde hair and the really awesome all three parts. Really awesome acting.
Trisha Helfer. Fan fail.
Okay. Yeah. She was a terrible show. I'm sorry for that.
You know what other show she was on for an entire season?
No, actually, I don't.
Burn Notice. You're noticing a trend here. I'm bringing it back. And I just had a coughing fit, so I had to edit something out. So I don't even know what we were talking about before the coughing fit.
We were talking about hairballs.
We should probably just wrap it up. Because I started coughing, and now I don't remember where we were. That is going to take us to the end of this extra long episode discussing Battlestar Galactica. But unlike Stargate, we're not cutting this into two episodes. We can get this covered in one.
That's true.
Check out the show notes. We're going to have links to C2E2 and Geek Love that Raven mentioned before. And join us again for another trip through the Jump Gate.
Visit the terminal at www.throughthejumpgate.wordpress.com. Leave comments or email us at jumpgate.podcast@gmail.com and subscribe to the show on iTunes.
The Jump Gate is closing. Stand clear of the terminal.
And we're mowing. We're mowing.
Mowing. Mowing.
Look, here's my penis. It's out. Oh, I almost knocked over my drink. It's not like you're not going to cut this whole part out.
Well, I don't want to cut this off, but you want to grab the door?
Yeah.
I thought they were done. They did this like 2 hours ago.